Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. It's Christmas, December 16th, 1983. Ireland is in the grip of the Troubles in Northern Ireland, and they've spread south because the IRA have just kidnapped 23 days previously the chief executive of, as it was at the time, Quinsworth / Tesco in Ireland, Don Tidy. And there was a massive Garda search, which an army, which focused on the woods near Ballinamore in County Leitrim. And the Gardaí conducted a meticulous search, and they came across an encampment where the IRA were holding Don Tidy captive. A gun battle ensued, and two public servants in our security services were murdered. Garda Gary Sheen, a very young man, just out of Templemore, still in Templemore, and Private Patrick Kelly, who's in his 30s. Both of them were shot dead in the incident. Don Tidy was rescued, and the kidnappers escaped, unbelievably, given they were in the middle of nowhere, so to speak, but they did escape. David Kelly is the son of Patrick Kelly, Private Patrick Kelly, who was killed that day in Dorada Woods. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you? And David, there's an upcoming event which is upsetting in Ballinamore, which, to say the least, is upsetting you and your family.
That's true, yeah. There's an event. It's a commemoration. I think it goes under the title the John Joe McGirl Memorial Walk. Mm-hmm. It's a memorial walk, a commemoration for McGirl. And the thing is, John Joe McGirl had a very colourful past. You know, he was in the IRA. I believe he was a chief of staff of the IRA. He was also local to that area. I believe he actually originally came from Auchnashiellan and outside Ballinamore. My problem is that he played a central role in supplying and sort of providing safe houses for the kidnappers of Don Tidy, mm-hmm. and the murderers of my father and Gary Sheehan. So the fact that this annual commemoration takes place as part of a publicly funded town festival that actually goes under the title of a family festival. So that's the issue at its heart.
And it happened. You'd see the brochure even last year. Ballinamore Family Festival, John Joe McGirl Memorial Walk. Now, this has taken on an extra focus because of the publication of a book by Ronan McGreevy of the Irish Times and Tommy Conlon, both of whom, another journalist, both of whom are native to Leitrim. And among other things, they point out, and I'm reading from a review in The Examiner, they are not shy, this is McGreevy and Conlon, about detailing the amount of help the kidnappers had, but are at pains to point out that the vast majority of locals in the area were law-abiding citizens who voted Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael and abhorred violence. Much of the discussion around the help the gang received during and after the kidnappings, because they escaped, as we know, centres on local Sinn Féin councillor at the time, John Joe McGirl. It is a sordid tale of intimidation and betrayal of the state. They had people, these are the kidnappers who were in the woods in a makeshift encampment. They had people supplying them with food, obviously, hot water, eardrops, because one of the, I think Don Tidy became unwell, and most of all, shelter in the form of safe houses when their lair was discovered. And when their lair was discovered by, among others, your father and Gary Sheen and numerous other Gardaí and members of the Defence Forces, the members of the Provisional IRA decided to break their way out by machine gunning anyone that came in their way. Now, but John Joe McGirl, he was anyone that knows the story of John Joe McGill, he was chief of staff of the IRA and he fought in the 57 campaign and he was proud of it and he was involved in the debate in the IRA about the formation then of the provisionals. But he was the local publican undertaker. He was very popular for many different reasons, David, in the town of Ballinamore.
And he was a county councillor for many years. I'm sure he did, he provided good constituency work to a lot of citizens. And I actually have nothing against the memorial walk per se.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to ban anything here. They can have their commemoration any time of the year they want. When I was in Ballinamore last October,
okay.
I participated in the book launch, and actually someone invited me to attend the festival because they said there's another side to Ballinamore you've never seen, and you could attend the festival and it's full of fantastic events. But then I became aware of that part of that festival has this commemoration. That's my problem. The commemoration should take place at some other time. And people like me, who are families of IRA victims, should be able to go to the festival like anyone else in good conscience.
And it is billed, as you say, as the Ballinamore Family Festival. When you were in Ballinamore, David, is there anything to mark that's the nearest town to where your father was murdered?
Nothing whatsoever, unfortunately. When I think back to that day, it was a Friday. A Friday morning when my father arrived there with a convoy of army trucks that travelled up from Custrin Barracks, Athlone that morning. He was in Ballinamore that mid-morning, and by mid-afternoon he'd be dead. Here we are 41 years later, and there's nothing, absolutely nothing to mark the service and sacrifice of him and Garda Gary Sheehan in the service of the state, in the security of the state. There was one occasion where myself and my three siblings travelled up to Ballinamore area in the hope of locating the Rada Woods. And in the back roads there beyond about 5 miles north of Ballinamore. We couldn't locate it amongst all the other woodlands because there was nothing to mark it. I know now that we drove directly past it. That just shows how little we knew. And we went back into the town of Ballinamore. The only memorial we did see was the memorial for John Joe McGarrell. There's a very prominent memorial for him there.
Oh, I did not. There is a memorial to John Joe McGarrell in the town.
There is a very prominent one, okay. Yes.
But even at the nearest roadside spot, and as we know, when the kidnappers, they hijacked the car and they drove obviously towards the nearest road. Now, some of them headed off. I'm relying on my memory of Ronan McGreevy and Tommy Condon's book, which is excellent and has loads of new material. There is a road nearby, even, and you see them all over Ireland. People put up small memorials to people who were killed nearby, especially on the side. Is there any marking even on the public road?
No, there's nothing whatsoever. You wouldn't know. If you went up to that general area, you would never know that two members of the Irish Security Forces. And don't forget, it's quite unique in the history of our state because you have the both uniforms fell side by side. I think it's the only case of it. And, I mean, it should be, and there's nothing in the town of Ballinamore itself. When you think of visitors coming to Ballinamore, learn about the history of the general area, the general area, there's a positive history there as well, for example, the famous Irish writer John McGartan, wrote about that area, there's nothing that highlights the fact that two men were gunned down protecting our freedom to go about our business in peace.
Sean O'Sullivan is on the line. Sean, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Good morning to you.
And you're on the John Joe McGirl Memorial Committee.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct, Joe.
And are you involved in organising this walk?
Yeah, well, it's a commemoration through the town that's held every year, and it happens to be during the week of the festival. It's going for years and years. Now, there's a whole variety of events, Joe, that week. You know, they're not organised by the festival committee. Some are and some aren't.
Okay.
But, of course, John Joe is one of the most famous Leitrim Republicans of all time. He was interned in the 1940s and the 1950s. He was elected a TD in 1957. He was county councillor. He was chairman of the Leitrim County Council. So in many ways, apart from being a Republican, who spent about 12 or 14 years in jail, he was a very famous Republican. So this event is organised by a local committee. So it becomes part of the festival, of what happens during the festival. But I just want to find out it's not organised by the festival committee. But the programme shows all of the things that are. I mean, there are things organised with the GAA, there's the show organised by the show committee. So it's just another event. And a lot of people come home for that event.
What do you think of David Kelly, the son of Private Patrick Kelly? What do you think of his concerns?
I can understand David Kelly and his family. You know, his father was killed there at the Rada, and he talks about commemorating something like that. I mean, that's fine for somebody who wants to organise whatever event or commemorate. That was a tragic event at that time. But I'm just pointing out that from the John McGarry Committee, it's an event that is very well attended, and it doesn't cut across anything else. John Joe also, incidentally, was very much a peace man in the end. In 1984, he seconded the motion at an Ardesh in Fianna Ardesh that TDs, if elected, should take their seats in Dáil Éireann, and he was the seconder of that motion, and it was very significant at the time. So he was part of, if you like, the peace process.
He was a part of the peace process because he was part of the so-called armed struggle.
He was
a physical force Republican. He was a physical force Republican operating against the Irish state.
Well, he was operating against British occupation.
Well, he was imprisoned. He was imprisoned by the Irish state, among others.
And he was a long cash. He was also a long cash in the 70s. He was a long cash in the 70s. But I would say, now, there's a book, Leitrim's Republican Story, and Sean McDiarmid and John De McGarrett are on the front, because they're the two most famous Republicans, really. Now, Sean McDiarmid, the Leitrim County Council, organises commemoration every year, an event for him, you know, so... equally, John De McGarrett, very famous Republican. Obviously, there were things that would cut across people's, you know, tragic things on all sides. You know, any conflict, the same as looking at Palestine at the moment, you know, to the Palestinians, the Israelis are the terrorists, and to the Israelis, the Palestinians, are the terrorists. So it's the, whatever your perspective is it on. But certainly, from an Irish history point of view, John Joe was a very famous Republican. Really.
You know, you keep saying that, but he was, like, you must have read, so if you're interested in John Joe McGirl, you must have read the book called Kidnapping by Rona McGreevy and Tommy Conlon, both journalists, respected journalists, and both from the area, and they make no bones about the fact that much of the discussion in their book is around the help the IRA gang, who murdered, by the way, didn't kill Gary Kelly, didn't kill Patrick Kelly or Gary Sheen, they murdered him in cold blood. Much of the discussion around the help the IRA gang received centres on local Sinn Féin councillor John Joe McGirl. It's a sordid tale of intimidation and betrayal of the state. You didn't read that, did you, Sean?
Well, Joe, my point is that John Joe McGirl is a very famous Leitrimman and Irishman. To commemorate him, you know, 36 years after he died, commemorate him with an event every year is quite legitimate.
And there's no interest in Ballinamore, because one of the reasons, unfortunately, Ballinamore's most famous farm for, forget about John Joe McGirl, one of the reasons Ballinamore's most famous or infamous is because of the kidnapping of Don Tidy and the murder of those two members of our security forces. Is there any interest in Ballinamore in putting up a memorial, as David Kelly said, to his father, or to young Gary Sheen? Is there any interest?
I'm quite sure there may be, and it's up to people. I have no problem knowing.
But your committee is no interest.
Sorry. Would we want to put? All sides. Would you put up a memorial someplace in England to the Germans? It is about British occupation. Tragically, an Irish.
Hang on. You were equating a memorial to Garda Gary Sheen and Private Patrick Kelly to someone in Britain putting up a memorial to Nazis.
No.
That's what you've just said.
No, I've said John Joe McGarrell is the same as
Michael Collins. You've just said, would you see a memorial in Britain to the Germans, i.e. the Nazis? That's what you're talking about.
You are saying
David Kelly... No, I'm not. We'll isolate that clip if you want. I'll play it back to you. But you're saying what David Kelly, the son of Patrick Kelly, sorry, Private Patrick Kelly, who died in the service of this state, he was in the legal army of this state, and Gary Sheen was in the legal Garda Síochána of this state. The men who murdered them were not operating under any legal mandate, and were not being attacked. They were not being attacked from the air by bombs when you try and make the Palestinian equivalence. It doesn't exist.
I'll bring you back in a sec. I'm saying that John J. McGarrell was a very famous Republican. I have no problem with other people being commemorated. Absolutely no problem.
Okay. And what does the memorial walk consist of, Sean?
No, it's just a parade down the town. The band and the parade and the people parade down the town.
Are there school children involved?
Whoever wants to go to it. But there's an oration.
And who's giving the oration this year?
I can't tell you, Joe. I don't know.
Who gave it last year?
Off the top of my head, it'd be generally... Sinn Féin, and Gerry Adams,
as we know, did it a few years ago, as did Martin McGuinness. Right. Garda Eugene O'Sullivan, you were there on that day when Gary Sheen and Private Patrick Kelly were murdered. What do you think of what David Kelly is saying, the son of Patrick, as you know, saying he objects to a John Joe McGarrell memorial walk being held? I take your point, but it was advertised on their website, Sean, as being held as part of, Sean is saying it's not official, as part of the Ballinamore Family Festival, Eugene.
Good afternoon to you, Joe. I have to say I'm a little caught for words at the description of the events in Dorada Woods by that gentleman from Ballinamore, where he talks about a killing, a tragedy, a conflict. It was none of those things, Joe. As you described it, it was murder of two diligent servants of this state who were gunned down in cold blood by people who had just contempt and disdain for an Garda Síochána and Óglaigh na hÉireann, the Irish Army, the real Óglaigh na hÉireann, not the proper pretenders.
And I presume, did you read Ronan McCreevy and Tommy Conlon's book?
Well, I contributed to Tommy Conlon an interview.
Okay, so are you in any doubt that the kidnappers and the murderers, as they became in Dorada Woods, that they received help from John Joe McGarrell in Ballinamore?
I have no doubt whatsoever that he was central to the operation in Ballinamore and the support that the provisional IRA criminals got where they held Mr. Tidy in what was an obscene and a contemptuous crime. He was central to the organisation of the backup for that group.
In what way?
In the logistics of providing food, providing shelter, providing all the logistics that were needed to keep Mr. Tidy in the appalling conditions that he was kept in Dorada Wood during that terrible period in 1983.
And what was your role on the day, Eugene, as a member of the Garda Síochána?
My role on the day, I was part of what would have been considered, I suppose, the third engagement with the Provisional IRA criminal gang. The original engagement would have been where David Kelly's dad and Gary Sheehan were murdered. then where the IRA gang retreated, commandeered a car, and then they opened fire on the group that was bringing Mr. Tidy out onto the roadway. That was by my two late colleagues, Inspector Bill Summers and Sergeant Tom Conroy, and Garda Donald Kelleher was badly injured in that. That was an attempt at mass murder. I was at the next crossroads where we had blocked the road with a Ford Granada. A shout had gone out on the radio, "Do not shoot at the blue car, the guard has been taken hostage." Guards had been taken hostage, but that was at the original engagement. It wasn't in the blue car. Blue car comes around the bend, screeches to a halt. We hesitate, I hesitate. A member of the gang in full paramilitary attire gets out and just literally opens fire on the group of guards and soldiers that were at the crossroads. All or any of us could have been killed. It was that close to oblivion. We could have been wiped out, Joe. We hesitated. I suppose no guard, no soldier wants to kill anybody and wants to open fire. But we had a very close call. They showed the same contempt for An Garda Síochána and Óglacht na hÉireann and the Irish Army at that crossroads as they did when they murdered David Kelly and Gary Sheehan.
And what do you think of what Sean is saying, that John McGill was... He never hid the fact that he was a physical force Republican, but that he was instrumental then in the peace process.
It's good that, you know, he decided at the later stage of his life to swap the bullet for the ballot, but a little bit late for the families of Gary Sheehan and Patrick Kelly.
And what do you think then of the fact that there is a memorial walk to John McGill and there's not a mention anywhere of your two comrades who were killed on that day?
Of course, the people of Ballymore are entitled to put up any memorial they want, but I think it's very regrettable that nobody there seems to see fit to honour the lives of the two diligent servants of the state who stood up for the state against terrorism at a very difficult time in our history.
Ruth is in Ballinamore. Ruth, you're listening to David Kelly and indeed Sean and indeed Eugene. Your contribution, please, Ruth.
Oh, hello, yeah. Joe. Just on what your last caller said there, actually there's quite a lot of people in Ballinamore who would like to see a memorial for these two men whose lives were lost at that,
yes, sir, yeah,
that terrible time. There's a lot of us from Ballinamore. I'm not actually living there now, but I'm born and brought up there, and there's a lot of us who are very angry about the years of intimidation and the fact that, I mean, I knew John Joe personally and I liked him an awful lot. Mm-hmm. He's a lovely man on a personal level, but I certainly don't agree with a lot of the stuff that went on. I think it's shocking that there's a monument to John Joe and not a monument to two men who were shot down like that. It's horrific. And you know, I don't know if you know this, but you can't buy Tomás Conlon and Ronan McGreevy's book, Ballinamore. Isn't that shocking?
Why?
A Ballinamore man's book is not available for purchase in Ballinamore. I just think that's shocking.
And how do you know that, Ruth?
Because I tried to buy it.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, because somebody told me, yeah, and I said, no, I don't believe this. So I went in to Super Value and asked, and they said, no, you have to buy it online. So I found that unbelievable, actually.
And have you read the book, Ruth?
Oh God, yeah. It took me 3 days. I cried reading that book. And I remembered some of those things that happened. I was shocked. I didn't realise the proximity to me growing up. Mm. You know, the stuff about Ochnashealin and then the bomb from Enniskillen, and I cried. And, you know, my sister cried as well. And it's a very timely book. It's time it came out. Mm-hmm. And I think the young man who lost his father that day, I think he's
David
so brave.
David Kelly.
David Kelly, yeah. I think he's so brave. And I'm really glad that he's highlighting this. I'm really glad that he is.
But there are many new aspects brought to public eye in Conlon and McGreevy's book. And one of them is the level of, they specifically mentioned John McGill, and the level of support the IRA gang must have had from the nearest town, which was Ballinamore, for food, shelter, hot water, medicines.
Yeah.
Because they had him there for 23 days, nearly
a month.
I
know, yeah. I know, it's horrible. I would say, though, the level of support is, you know, I wouldn't think there were too many people involved in that.
Yeah, of course.
There may
have
been more people that knew something was going on. I know that sometimes people knew things were going on but turned a blind eye, and, you know, nobody wants to attract fearfulness, you know, just being scared probably. I was living in Galway at the time, and all the first I heard of it was, you know, that day when it broke out in December. And I went to the town a few days later, and all the journalists were gone. And I asked somebody in a shop, I said, "Oh God, you know, what's been going on here?" And she said, "Dune the veil." And that's people were just in shock over the whole thing.
Dune the veil. Keep your mouth closed.
Yeah.
And Sean, have you any observation about what Ruth is just alleging? As she's just saying there, she lived in Ballinamore. She's a Ballinamore native, and she said there is a fear. There was a intimidation around the place.
My main thing I've been on with you today is really John Drew McGarrow. I have no problem with commemorating the poor people who died. You know, it was a tragic thing that two people, that Private Kelly and Garda Sheehan, were killed. And if people want to commemorate them, that's perfectly legitimate and perfectly right. But equally, John Drew McGarrow was a very famous and Republican and leader in his community and a variety of things. You know, he was an organiser of a variety of things. As I said, he was chairman of the county council. He was he was a TD at one time. So he was elected by the people.
You've already told me yourself. The John Joe McGarrow Memorial Walk is not organised by Leitrim County Council. He was brilliant at filling potholes or whatever. It's organised. Is it organised? I know the speakers every year are Sinn Féin, which is totally legitimate. Is it organised by Sinn Féin?
It's a committee, separate committee, Joe, and it's running for years. As I say, it's just a commemorative event. Anybody can go to it, and it's just a walk down the town.
There is an oration at the end.
Oh, yeah.
And the oration does centre on the legacy of John Joe McGarrow, and does centre on the campaign for a united Ireland, as it was a violent campaign. Now, as we know, it's a civil campaign, which is totally and completely legitimate, and was argued for by people like John Hume for many, many years, that there was a choice. I know Michelle O'Neill said there wasn't a choice in terms of physical force, but people like John Hume did argue, and a lot of people argued, that there was a choice in terms of civil action, political action, and physical force. And just is every member, do I have to be a member of Sinn Féin to be on the John Joe McGarrow Memorial Committee?
You wouldn't know. It's only a small committee, you know, and it only organises that event. And it's kind of a welcome event within the... Quite a lot of people would come for that alone. But the whole festival is a wonderful festival.
From what you say, you've read a lot, Sean, and that's to be commended. Have you ever read the book by David Rupert? Would you be familiar with that name? David Rupert was an American. He was basically FBI. He infiltrated the IRA.
Yes.
Okay? And one of the places he was told, and one of the people he was told to go and meet within the IRA, and this is relatively recent. I know John Joe is dead, 13, 14 years?
13. He's 36 years dead.
But one of the people he was told to go and meet was John Joe McGarrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his name keeps popping up everywhere. And we're not talking about the 1950s.
Yeah.
Brian Galvin is on. Brian, you're listening as well. Brian is in Donegal. Brian, your contribution, please.
Yes, sure. Paddy Kelly was a friend of mine.
Okay.
Paddy Kelly was murdered. He left his wife and family in that loan and went to Ballinamore, and he came back in the box. And what's going on about putting up all these memorials? Paddy Kelly's son is right. He's 100%. This shouldn't... I don't know... The whole thing is turning around the other way. It's completely wrong.
Well, Sean O'Sullivan is saying, and I'll paraphrase him and correct me, check me if you wish, Sean. Sean is saying it's a tragedy, but there was lots of tragedies on both sides, and it was a tragedy that these two men were killed.
But we didn't go out to kill anybody. The Irish Army didn't go out to kill anybody. We went out to save people. We went overseas. We went to Cyprus, Lebanon, every country in Europe. We didn't set out to kill nobody. We never fired a shot anywhere at anybody. We never killed nobody in all the time of the Troubles.
And it is we were told not to fire
until you were fired on first. And that was too late for Paddy Kelly. If Paddy Kelly had done the right thing and fired first, we wouldn't be talking about this today.
And Brian, were you in the Irish Defence Forces?
I was, yeah. I was a friend of Paddy Kelly's.
Okay, and were you there on the day?
No, I wasn't there on the day.
Okay.
But Paddy Kelly left his wife and four young children. I went to Ballinamore. I came home in the box. And his son is 100% right.
And what do you think of the... It's on... We can't ascertain, is it part of the Ballinamore Family Festival or just something that gets publicity because it's on around the same time as the Ballinamore Family Festival, including in their publicity?
This is all about festivals and putting up memorials. You see, the whole thing is intertwined. See, why don't they have a day for themselves and not involve any festival or anybody else? If they want to put up them things, let them put them up.
Well, as Sean said, it's a parade in memory of John Joe McGill.
It's a parade for him.
With bands and an oration.
What about Paddy Kelly?
Well, that's David Kelly's point.
What kind of a parade are we going to have for him?
And David, you were only 9 at the time, and as Brian says, your father Patrick had 4 young children. Have you any memory of the time? You must have, David.
Well, I clearly remember that day, being a young 9-year-old boy back at home. It was at St. Patrick's Crescent in Moat, and it was getting to around tea time, and it was beginning to get dark. And I remember just the thought crossed my mind, Dad's not home from work yet, you know, and I just got a bit anxious. And then I just happened to look out the living room window onto the street. And coming up the pathway was a scene I'll never forget. It was like an assortment of people in different uniforms, because you had members of An Garda Síochána, you had men in army men, and you had a member of the clergy. Yeah. And they were coming up our the pathway to our front door, and our lives were about to change forever.
There's no family festival in Athlone. For your family who were sundered, and I know your mother died very young as well, and she was in her 50s, but and your family moved 3 years after your father's murder. But did your mother know on the day, because the word did come out on the day that a soldier and a Garda had been killed, that she had been murdered? Did she know that before the army chaplain and various other people arrived at the door?
No, she didn't. She was. I remember it well. She was taken into a room, and the news was broken to her. And at the same time, I was taken into a separate room, and I was told it was actually by my mother's brother-in-law, who was an army man as well, who tried to explain to a 9-year-old that his father was gone forever.
I'll go back finally to retired. Were you an inspector when you retired, Eugene?
No, I finished as a guard as well. Okay. I started as a guard and I finished as a guard.
And Eugene, obviously Gary Sheen is remembered on the Garda Memorial in Dublin Castle. His name is there. Last time I was up there, I think it is. But what do you think of David's camp? What David's saying is, should there not be a memorial too? And it's only the and we know 22 children lost their father in the Garda Síochána when the fathers were killed by the Provisional IRA, and including up to relatively recently. But what about David's point? One, it's in an awful way, it's a unique situation that two uniformed security elements of the state the Army and the Gardaí. It's the first time two of them fell together. And there is not a joint memorial to the two of them, Eugene.
It's very disappointing and regrettable that it's the state, or indeed the people of Ballymore, haven't seen fit to have a memorial to the two lives that were lost. For example, there's a memorial to the late Jerry McCabe, also murdered by the IRA, at the Garda station in Adair. I see no reason why a similar memorial couldn't be at the Garda station at Ballymore to mark the loss of lives on that day. And I would remind people as well, Joe, that this crime is still, there's an open file still in this crime.
I know that, yeah.
And there may be people out there, Joe, who have changed their views on violence and may see it in their older years to come forward and give the relevant information to the investigating authorities and bring final closure to the family of Paddy Kelly and Gary Sheehan.
And Sean, finally to you, in fairness, you mentioned earlier, you know, your interpretation of the campaign, the IRA campaign between 1970 effectively and 1998, which went on beyond that in some elements as well. You said there was two sides. Is there two sides, given what Ruth said, who was a native of Ballinamore, is there two sides still in Ballinamore? Do you follow me?
I wouldn't think so, Joe, no. I wouldn't think so. I think the whole peace process has changed the whole thing. And as I say, John Joe was part of that at the beginning. And I wouldn't think so, Joe, no. I wouldn't see any, I wouldn't see any difficulty. I mean, look at people who die in a conflict. Any side should be commemorated. Certainly, they're entitled to that and to be remembered. And I think I understand, I may be incorrect this, but David, I think in Moat, where Paddy Kelly lived at the time, the town park was named in his honour. There were some small things, but that's everybody who dies in any conflict should be commemorated properly, because if they give their lives to it, whatever side it is, I mean, they believe in what they're doing. If somebody joins the Irish Army or whatever army it is, if that leads to them given that supreme sacrifice, they're entitled to be commemorated. And no matter what side they come on, I don't think in Ballymore.
So, for example, do you think, going back to the murder of Earl Mountbatten, where the man who detonated the bomb, Thomas McMahon, that he saw two children getting on that boat? He saw two children. And he murdered those two children. Do you think those two children deserve the same as Thomas McMahon?
Well, you look at anybody.
And as we know, John Joe McGill's son, since deceased, was arrested with Thomas McMahon, but he was acquitted. In fairness,
it wasn't his son Joe. It wasn't John Joe's son.
Okay, relation. And unfortunately, that man, that nephew, subsequently died in a tractor accident, right. Yeah. Which is tragic for everyone. But children were being murdered.
Yeah.
And the IRA knew they were murdering children.
Yeah.
And you're saying Thomas McMahon should be he's still alive, thank God. But Thomas McMahon should be remembered the same way as young Andrew Maxwell, who he saw getting on that boat in clear daylight on that August morning, because he was waiting to detonate the bomb that he had placed on the boat with a number of other people, belonged to Mountbatten. He knew who got on that boat. He saw the children and the women getting on. I'm just making this as a point, but he decided to go ahead. And it was certain death, as we know, and murdered as many people as he could in that boat. And when he saw the children, he didn't say, "No, lads, come on, off we go. This is not on." And there was many, many children killed. Warrington,
many, yeah.
Jonathan Ball, young Parry. Did they deserve, the people who killed, who murdered those two children deserved, because you say it was a conflict, they deserved to be memorialised on both sides?
No, I said all the people who die in the conflict. You know, Patrick Kelly died there tragically. Anybody who's killed in the conflict, I mean, they're all tragic. I mean, we're looking at what's happening all over the world, Palestine and Gaza at the moment.
Yeah, but
you know, children...
Yeah,
but tragically, yeah. Children are being killed all over the place. Yeah.
But children, there is a difference between children who are being bombed from the air deliberately by a state, yeah. And our government, among others, many others, has condemned what Israel is doing. Condemned. So you can't justify the murder of those many children who were killed by the IRA, because what you see and what everyone, the vast majority of people in the world, condemn what is happening in Gaza. Listen, there's no equivalence. Yeah. I'm sorry. David Kelly,
yes.
I presume, and in fairness, Sean is civic-minded and he's organising this. I presume you're not going to get any reaction apart from the likes of Ruth, who's now left Ballinamore. And I've spoken in the wonderful library in Ballinamore, indeed, about the children who were killed in the 1916 Rising, who were long forgotten. And I received, it was a lecture, and there was a fantastic attendance and a fantastic reaction. So I presume, we will do that. And remember, Thomas McMahon served his sentence, did his time, so he's now a free man, and in that sense, he's an innocent man, so I take that point. Okay, good to meet him, Margaret. Brian Galvin, David Kelly, and again, condolences, David, on the death of your, the murder of your father, and also to the family of Gary Sheehan. Sean O'Sullivan, good to Margaret. Eugene O'Sullivan as well, Garda. Thank you all. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie and 51551 is our text number. By the way, nobody actually knows who pressed the detonating button that day, but Thomas McMahon was arrested on the day of the bombing and found guilty for planting the bomb. And he has acknowledged that, and he's now a free man, and so be it. He's about 70 years of age. He was convicted of the murder of Lord Louis Mountbatten and three others. Two of them were children, in Mullaghmore, Sligo, and in the west of Ireland, as we say, in the early 1970s. Okay, back to less important issues, but still stuff that's upsetting people, as we heard over the last week. People going on holidays discovering, in some cases, when they arrive at a hotel, the agency through which they purchased the holiday, for some reason the money hadn't arrived at the hotel. Now, Martin Dial, what happened in your situation, Martin?
Hi, Darius. We booked a holiday in Saloon, Spain, the end of last June into the early July. And we were there for 10 days. On the morning, our flight was supposed to leave at 7:15 p.m. I went down to reception to find out what time our transfer was leaving, which we booked through the Love Holidays. And we were informed that the transfer had left at 1:15 in the morning. So we rang Love Holidays and said, look, we've tried to book our transfer. They said it's left. And our flight is not till 7:15 in the evening. So they looked into it and said, yes, we can see your flight at 7:15, 7:10 or 7:15. Get a taxi to the airport, keep the receipt, and we'll reimburse you what it cost you. And so we did. We booked a taxi, 210 or 15 euros. On our way to the airport, we were trying to book the flight, and it kept saying, flight has departed, flight has departed. Rang Love Holidays back. They said, no, we can see here your flight is 7:15. Go to the desk when you get there and sort it out, and we'll try and deal with it from this side. We got to the airport, went up to the desk. Behold, the flight had left 7:15 in the morning. As my wife was coming back from the desk, she got an email from Love Holidays saying, it was down to us to be in contact with the air company and to sort our own flights home. Goodbye, basically. Left us there, myself, my wife and five kids in Barcelona Airport at 6 p.m. on a Thursday night, Thursday evening. And basically, that was it. Stranded us there. So we couldn't get a flight the next day. there was a flight going, but with there wasn't enough seats, so the next flight we could get was on the Saturday, which I had to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had to try and obviously sort out some accommodation, which was a nightmare. We were 3 hours looking for accommodation in Barcelona on such short notice, obviously. And we found an apartment which cost us, I think, nearly €800 for the 2 nights.
Okay.
I think 800 odd for the flights. And obviously, then we had to fend for ourselves food-wise and entertain 5 children and ourselves for a couple of days. Get our own flights back on Saturday. And Love Holidays basically refused. We said they had no problem. That was the airways that we should have been in contact with, that we should have got an email off, which we didn't. We've gone through every email, every spam, everything. We had no contact of the airways. They said we should have been contacted in March.
Mm.
This was the end of June. But Jeff, we were speaking to him on the phone, which was early in July when we were back, coming back into the airport. And they said, yeah, oh, we can see that your flight is this evening. So they didn't know it had been changed.
Okay, well, Love Holidays are saying, in their initial responses, are saying that your disruption to your holiday was caused by fueling the airline schedule change. We had no control over that. It's the airline's responsibility to offer your family a refund and any compensation they are owed. Their airline requires customers to lodge these requests with it directly. As part of our post-travel process, we encourage the Doyles to submit a claim to the airline directly and upon their return. And they say they didn't receive a response from Miss Doyle, who was the email contact.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, but she sent everything to Vueling, which we got. We sent her all the receipts as well through post. I've allowed it wasn't through email.
And how much?
We never.
Yeah. How much did you have to spend extra, so to speak?
Well, between everything, it was just about €3,000.
Okay.
That was including now feeding ourselves and entertaining ourselves. I will agree for the day. I mean, what were we going to do? We weren't going to sit in a room.
Of course.
In an apartment in Barcelona. You know? I mean, yeah. Everyone was upset enough as it was, kind of a thing. You know?
Des Kyo was contacted as well. Des, what's your happenings with Love Holidays?
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me on today. Joe, we booked a holiday back in January. We were coming to our 25th wedding anniversary in April. And we decided we'd book holiday to Egypt.
Okay.
We were to fly out the 6th of April. We were in the airport ready to go, and 5 minutes before we were to depart, the flights was cancelled due to Storm Kathleen. To be fair to Swiss Airlines, they rescheduled flights. They put us up in the hotel in Dublin for the night, taxi the following morning back to the airport for different flights to Egypt. Now, on the Saturday afternoon, we contacted Love Holidays and explained that the flight's been cancelled due to a storm. They said, no problem. They would contact the hotel in Egypt, and they advised us to contact the hotel as well. So we did so. So on Sunday morning, the 7th of April, we were picked up and brought to the airport. Just before we boarded the rescheduled flights, we decided to ring Love Holidays to make sure everything was okay before we departed. And we were given the green light, yes, board away and enjoy your trip. So we had a 6-hour flight to Cairo, 2-hour wait over in Cairo, and an hour and a half flight then down to Hurghada. And we arrived in Hurghada Airport around 12 o'clock, got a taxi and straight to our hotel, 12:30 in the morning. To be met with a receptionist telling us there was no reservation for us.
Okay, which is a familiar story, unfortunately.
Yeah. From our there is a number on our paperwork that you ring when you have difficulty checking into your hotel.
Mm-hmm.
We rang that number, and we were speaking to a lady from Love Holidays, and she said she was working on it. An hour past 1:30, the hotel was more or less pushing us out the door, and said that they were fully booked up, for the week. They had no spare rooms, and to try the hotel down the road. So this was 1:30 in the morning. We left that hotel, walked approximately a mile, and we checked into a different hotel for that night. So when we were settled into that room, Joe, we rang Love Holidays and explained that we were after getting alternative accommodation for that night, but we'd need an update by 8 a.m., which was only a few hours away, to see what was going to happen. And at 7:30 a.m., we received an email from Love Holidays saying they don't deal with hotel matters.
Okay, what do they deal with?
I don't know. So we did try to play with the hotel, but they wouldn't speak to us because we didn't book the holiday. So, Joe, we had no alternative but to book emergency flights home.
Oh, God. Okay.
So we left that hotel that we had just booked in for the night, got a taxi back to the airport, and we were en route back to Ireland. And we got home to our own house on the Tuesday morning, around 1:30 in the morning. So Tuesday, some part of the day, I rang Love Holidays to explain the situation, and they told me I would have to wait post-travel to log a complaint. So we were due to come home the 13th of April, so we had to wait until the 13th of April to get in on the Love Holiday app and log a complaint.
Mm.
And I have been chasing them and chasing them and chasing them ever since. You can't even get through to them on the phone anymore, Joe, because my Love Holiday reference has now expired. And the only way I can get to speak to someone is I pretend I'm booking another holiday and I plead with that sales team person to put me through to customer support.
Okay, you try and go in another way, so to speak.
Yeah, and customer support can do nothing for me, only telling me to email the post-travel team. I've requested phone calls from the post-travel team and I'm getting nothing back. I contacted Love Holidays last Wednesday and I was then told again to send another email to the post-travel team, and I received an email yesterday from the post-travel team saying that the flights are down to the Swiss Airlines and we should be going after Swiss Airlines because they delayed the flights. And in one of the emails I received, Joe, they actually said, I chose to cut my holiday short and leave without notifying them.
Okay. Now, we've just got this email in from loveholidays.ie. We're sorry to hear of Mr. Coe's experience after his airline rescheduled his flights. While both Love Holidays and Mr. Coe informed his hotel of his late arrival, the hotel did not hold a room. The primary responsibility to offer compensation to this situation lies with the airline. And to date, we have provided Mr. Coe with support to request this. This is a bit of good news for you, Des. We understand that Mr. Coe's experience has not lived up to our usual high standards, however, and we are sorry about this. We can confirm we have now issued you with a full refund. Have you got that?
Since this morning.
Since this morning, yeah.
Yeah, because I spoke with your agent, Tara, this morning, yeah, and well, she was...
Well, this is what we've just got from them now. We can confirm we've now issued you, we can now issue him, with a full refund for his holiday, and in addition, a €250 voucher as a gesture of goodwill. So they're saying they're refunding you, Des. Check your... Have you got an email? Checked your email recently?
Yeah, well,
but they're saying it to us. I'm sure they will. Yeah. I'm sure they will.
Yeah. Up to this morning when I spoke to your colleague, Tara, we hadn't received anything. And Tara did tell me that she spoke through to someone in Love Holidays through your media angle. And they had done everything they had they could for me.
Okay. Well, they're saying on the national airwaves, getting your money back.
Well, I'm delighted. I'm really, really chuffed now that that's a headache gone and it hasn't been a good experience. I have used Love Holidays 4 other times and never had an issue.
Okay.
But this time has been a complete disaster.
And so, Martin, I presume you're going to hope that you have similar luck with Love Holidays and getting your money back. You there, Martin? Martin's gone, is he? Don't give up hope, Martin. That's what I'm saying. You heard him. Four children, 17, 15, 13 and 9. Hopefully we can do something for Martin as well. Okay, Des, you've got your full refund and you've got a €250 gesture of goodwill as well. Des Kyo and Martin Doyle both, thank you. Joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe@rte.ie. We've been talking now, it's well over 2 years, to Olga Kuzhenko in Mariupol. And we spoke to her before the Russians invaded. We spoke to her after the Russians invaded and the devastation. Tragically, and anyone who saw that incredible Oscar-winning documentary, 20 Days in Mariupol, would have just been horrified by the behaviour of the Russians. And Olga is back with us. Olga, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you? You're still in Mariupol. What's it like now?
I'm still here, but I plan to move to Istanbul soon.
Okay, and what is the situation in Mariupol now?
Situation is calm. Russians invest a lot of money in Mariupol.
Yeah.
It doesn't look that they are going to leave, but we don't know what will happen later. War is still going on, and the war situation is changing because Ukraine get a permission to hit the targets on the Russian territory. Do you know about that?
No, tell us. Go on. I know.
Ukraine hits the targets on the territory of Russia.
Yeah, but they need...
It hits the oil stations and the positions behind the Ukrainian border.
And when the Russians captured the city... They said they would...
They have captured the city in the March 22.
Mm-hmm.
Mariupol have been occupied by Nazi Germany for four years. And the house I live in is built by the Germans. And now the history repeats itself and the Russians built a lot of houses now. But I'm not sure that they will stay here forever. And also, I have sold my second apartment to Russians, and they told me that Russian banks don't give credits for buying a real estate in Mariupol. So they are not sure.
So what is day-to-day life under Russian rule, under Russian occupation? What is day-to-day life like?
Mariupol is alive. People work, people live their lives. But anyway, people are very traumatized. And when you communicate with people, you see that their cycle is changed. People are infected by fear. And everybody tell stories. And every story is more scary than another one.
And what about day-to-day life in terms of water, electricity, education, health?
All communications are working and schools are working. And I know that even university is working. But I don't know. schools, they built a lot of new schools, but schools and kindergartens are half empty because there are not too much people in the city now.
And is there any, I can imagine the retribution if there was, is there any protests by locals against the Russian occupation?
It's very dangerous. We are very, very careful with our telephone conversations. If you start to discuss any politics or news, your partner of communication stops you and say, when we meet personally, we will talk about it.
So what's ahead of you now in Istanbul, Olga?
Yes, I'm going to move there soon. I will connect with you when I will do this, but I'm very worried about the trip. I worry about my mom who will stay here, and I worry about the checks on the Russian border, and I have bought a new phone, a second phone, where is no political information for checks, because they check phones on the border.
Oh, so is there a possibility they will not let you leave?
I don't think so. I don't look like a criminal.
Mm. And you say many people have left Mariupol.
Many people have left Mariupol during an active phase of war, and also a lot of people cannot come back because Russia lets Ukrainian in only through the Moscow airport, and people need to have a filtration procedure when the security service check your phones, your social media pages, and they keep the phones for 5 hours to check everything, and they don't let everybody in. So sometimes people want to come back, but they can't.
It's extraordinarily difficult. And what is morale like, Olga?
People live how they can, and we don't try not to discuss a lot politics too much, because you don't know who I'm talking to and what this person can do, because we still feel in danger.
Yeah.
We feel like we are in prison.
And you say
anyway, people are very in stress.
But you say that. People are hopeful that that Ukraine will ever recapture Mariupol, which is part of Ukraine? Is the hope receding, or are people becoming more hopeful that they can get rid of the Russians?
People afraid to have a war situation again, but also people know who destroyed the city, who killed more than 100 or 120,000 people died here during a war. Okay. Mariupol has a population of 500,000 people, and every fifth citizen of Mariupol has died during an active phase of war. And but I think my personal opinion that this situation will be changed a political way, not a military way.
So, well, you need not tell me if you wish, because the Russian embassy are probably listening. Do you hope to make for Istanbul soon?
Yes, maybe this month or next month.
Okay. And what does your mother think?
She wished me happiness, and also I will ask her to have an international passport, and probably later she will come to Istanbul too, because I worry about her to stay here alone.
Well, you're incredibly brave staying so long.
I think so.
Well, I know you'd say this is your family and then your friends. What are your friends? What are they thinking, Olga?
Some of them don't believe that Ukraine will come back.
Okay.
They are getting used to a new life in other countries. Most of my friends have left the city. And I also know that a lot of people come back because people want to be at home, not to live like refugees.
Okay, Olga, well, safe traveling. And kind regards to your family, and please keep in touch if you can.
Yes, of course. I will tell you when I will get the result.
And Slava Ukraini. Thanks indeed. That's Olga Kuzemko. Joe at rt.ie. 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Gerry Reynolds, businessman now in Carrick on Shannon and indeed former Fine Gael TD for Leitrim Sligo. Gerry, you were listening to the discussion about the Ballinamore Family Festival and this parade in memory of John Joe McGill.
I was, Joe, and I was listening in particularly to Sean O'Sullivan and what he had to say. And the Ballinamore Family Festival was established nearly 60 years ago, and my father was one of the founding members.
Okay.
And it was always a family-run event, and it has been very successful for a long number of years and continues to be. But my issue, and I think David also said it, my issue was the politicising of the event or of the festival by the committee of the John Joe McGill Memorial Committee or by Sinn Féin. And I just feel that a family event like that should have never been politicised. I don't agree with Sean O'Sullivan to say that it's the same thing as a local GEA club, are the same thing as the local show, Ballinamore show. And it would be my strong view that it shouldn't appear on the brochure of the Ballinamore Festival. And if they want to hold a memorial to John Joe McGill, which they are very entitled to do so, they should do it. But they shouldn't do it those 2 weeks of the year, which a lot of people come and visit Ballinamore. It's known as the friendly town. And I just feel that it was unnecessarily politicised.
But is there any reason they have it during that time period of the Ballinamore Family Festival? Does that coincide?
Yes, because it's the busiest week of the year in Ballinamore. And a lot of family. It was established as an immigrant festival in the 60s for people who were in England, particularly to come home. And they've done that. And they continue to do that. And a lot of families who live in Dublin and other parts of Ireland all come back for the festival and the show, and it's a great week. But unfortunately, in my view, it was unnecessarily politicised, and I don't think that was the right thing to do. And as I say, there's 50 other weekends of the year that the John Joe McGill Memorial Committee could have a memorial to John Joe McGill, and I think that's what they should do.
But the other point that Gerry, that Sean O'Sullivan made, was that John, there were many, many bows to John Joe McGill. He was involved in County Council. They ran this family, were well liked, well respected in the area. I mentioned the fact that, okay, one of his nephews, Francis McGill, who subsequently was, as I said, tragically killed, was charged in relation to the Mountbatten killings, but was acquitted. But he also said he's the most famous person from Ballinamore, and that's one of the reasons why we want to honour John Joe McGill.
Well, I have no difficulty, Joe, with them honouring John Joe McGill. My only issue is that when they honour him, and they, in my view, I wrote a letter back in 1997 to the Leitrim Observer when I was a member of Dáil Éireann, and it was about a fife band that came down the town, and the last weekend, I think it was the first year that they had the John Joe Memorial, and a fife band came down the town wearing balaclava or wearing blackberries and singing Republican slogans. They stopped the entertainment on the local festival and the politicised event, and that's my issue. And I just think that in fairness to the Ballinamore Festival, in fairness to the public funding they get, in fairness to the corporate funding they get, that it should have never been politicised. And it's a very different situation to have it on the same week as the local show or the GEA having the thing. I don't accept that analogy by Sean O'Sullivan. And all I'm saying to them is that in the interest of the development and the progression of Ballinamore, that they might consider moving it from that date to another date in the calendar.
But also Ruth, who was a native of Ballinamore, and you would know Ballinamore more recently, much more than I would, the publication of this book, Kidnapping, by two Leitrim journalist, well-respected journalist, which did actually mention John Joe McGill and providing support logistically and otherwise to the IRA kidnappers in Dorada Woods. But is that, what was the phrase, Ruth was told, doing the veil? Now, that's going way back. And now, but she also says, as far as, now, I hope the local library in Ballinamore has Rona McGreevy's and Tommy Collins' book, because it's a fantastic piece of history, apart from anything else. But is Ballinamore divided, Gerry?
No, well, I mean, I think they made strongly the view in that book, Joe, and I don't want to be politicising this, but I come from a family that in 3 years' time will be 100 years in political life, unbroken. There's been four TDs in the family, and we've always got a tremendous vote in Ballinamore. The vast majority of people in Ballinamore are law-abiding citizens, so the history would suggest to you very strongly that is not. And the amount of support that was given at the time of that horrific killing of the Paddy Kelly and Gary Sheehan was very small, but it still has an imprint on the view that Ballinamore was somewhat a Republican town, and that could not be any further from the truth. But I just really feel strongly that it was the politicising unnecessarily of a fantastic weekly event in Ballinamore that shouldn't now continue to take place.
Which is the point made by David Kelly, the son of Private Patrick Kelly at the beginning.
Yes, and I agree with that.
Okay. Thanks indeed, Gerry Reynolds, businessman and former Fine Gael TD for Leitrim Sligo. Mark Dwyer is on sound. Clara Eustace is research and producer. Owen McLaughlin. Catherine Thomas is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in store or online.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.